Hello and welcome back, everyone. And I think we're going to talk to Vikram again. So we spoke to Vikram about a month back, and I think it was a fantastic conversation, Vikram. So I should tell you that some of our common friends and classmates that we had, they reached out and said that this is great and you should do another conversation with Vikram, right? So we didn't even plan that, but you know, I think there was specific requests from a couple of people who would probably be very happy to see this, Vikram. So we're not going to do introductions, Vikram, because I guess those who want to know you should watch the previous video. But also, as always, I will give your details in the description. But we want to dive right in, Vikram.
Sure.
And, you know, you had said last time that the way, you know, one of the ways I would, at least I said this, right? One of the ways that I would describe you is being a serial entrepreneur, right? And I want to get your how your mind works, how your thinking works around product design, around, you know, building a company and all of that. So I'll start with product design. So if you can explain your thought process around designing a product, you know, how do you envision, do you look at the problem first? Do you look at the solution first? Do you, you know, just what is your overall just open discussion thinking process, Vikram?
Cool. So when I heard you say the word design, right, I thought the first thing we should start with is what does design mean, right? I think this is the biggest misconception people have, which I also had up until a year or two back, right? Which is why I've been a serial entrepreneur, and I hope that I stop the serialness of that and it becomes just this company for the next 10 years, right? So design, when we think about design, what do we think, right? We think graphic design, we think shapes, colors, fonts, we think UI, right? But if you think about design in its truest sense, everything is design, right? And especially in terms of the user experience. And that's, when you say product design, that's the design we're talking about. We're not talking about how the product looks. We're talking about who is it serving? What is the problem it solves? How does it solve that problem in a way that's better than how the competition solves it? And what is the value you're delivering to that user, right? To make his life better, his or her life better. And that is what design is. Design is being intentional about thinking through people and their problems and their needs and their desires and their aspirations and fulfilling it in a way that's better than the competition at a price that people would find attractive, right?
Hmm.
And I think that's what design is. So if you think about, so broadly, that's what I consider to be product design, right? Like, I don't think it's how the product looks. How the product looks is a function of you understanding all these other things, right? So the interface, so to say, is just your avatar of your understanding of the end user and their problems. So like in terms of where do ideas come from, right? Like I find there's a few different sources, right? Like the first one, and I think this is the best, is if you experience the problem yourself, right?
Yeah.
So if you experience the problem, God damn it, like you are your own customer. You don't even need to go get validation from 200 other people. Like, you know for a fact, have I solved the problem or not? Because you can use the product and see if you solved it or not. Now, obviously, you don't want to just rely on a sample size of one. But at the same time, nothing is better than experiencing the problem yourself, right? Like, for example, I run a company that does data storytelling and visual analytics design, right? So I make a lot of data visualizations. I help people find better ways to represent data in a way that actually helps people solve problems and understand insights, right? Now, obviously, I'm not just going to take some out-of-box chart from some random software and like peddle it off as a masterpiece, right? Like, a lot of thought goes into each single element of that. And it is so painful to make, dude. It is really, really bad to make. And the first thing that got me thinking is there has to be a better way. Like, I need to make this easier for myself. And then I got to thinking, how many others probably experience the same problem? And how does this problem manifest itself? Like, does it lead to a lot of people not even taking this up? Does it lead to like inefficient processes? And the answer is yes. Like, a lot of people could make a lot of things better in this world by just being able to like design visualizations and dashboards a lot more easily and quickly, right? So now that got me thinking, okay, I'm helping people build great visual analytics, but at the same time, I want to also help other people like go through the process of building that up a lot more easily. So I have a service that is running, but I also have a product idea that came from it, right? Because I experienced the problem myself. So that's one thing. The second is like one level removed from it, where you could say, I kind of observe something, right? But I don't experience it firsthand. Like, so this is how I actually got started on this whole data storytelling journey. Like every manager slash executive I was speaking to was talking about how they're drowning in data and data fatigue, and like the people who are reporting to them just make such shitty presentations and shitty dashboards. Like they don't know where to look. Like it's like they have to go through a 72 slider just to try and get like two lines out of it, right? And that makes no sense. Like, so the thought was, hey, like there is this thing called the pyramid principle, which came out of McKinsey, and there are these storytelling frameworks. And if people just understood how the human mind works and they learned how to use these frameworks, then they could communicate using data a lot more efficiently, right? But still, it took me a very long time to kind of sift through that process, because data storytelling in itself is a very like vague thing, right? Like it doesn't indicate a problem, a very specific problem. So for example, if I were to tell you, I'm going to help you pitch to investors and raise funding. Now that's the concrete example of using data storytelling for a particular problem, right? But if I just talk about data storytelling, it's too vague. So
yeah,
if you kind of observe the problem but don't experience it, it will take you some time to go from that generic kind of definition to a specific problem. And the only way you'll get there is by talking to a lot of people and, you know, putting out stuff very rapidly and seeing like what people respond to. Then there's these people who do their first principle thinking and whatever. And that's another source of ideas, right? Like for example, like all Elon Musk companies are based on that kind of
thing. Yeah. Right?
So it's like, we're going to run out of fossil fuels in 50 years, but everyone's acting like it's going to last forever. So if I build an alternative right now, I can capture the entire market. Right.
Yeah.
So one is, where is the energy coming from? Second is, what is the vehicle running on? Right. So where is the energy coming from? Solar or any other renewable source. And what is the vehicle running on? Electric, not fuel anymore. Right. And it's the same thing with SpaceX. It's like, eventually humankind might need to become a multi-planetary species.
Yeah.
And how the hell do we get out of here if we don't have rockets? Right.
So, yeah, yeah.
Like this, and actually his idea for the boring company was pretty awesome, right? Like they built these tunnels and stuff. And the way they explained it is, we live our life in 3D, right? Like there are buildings that people go to and they live in. And there's like, it's in the third dimension. There's a height to it, right? Not everyone's living on the ground floor.
Yeah.
But our transportation is 2D.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So obviously there's a one dimensional, like there's a reduction of one dimension and hence the bottleneck, right? So if we kind of make that also 3D, where people are like traveling at multiple heights, then we could solve the congestion around traffic, right? So it's a very first principles approach to like solving a problem, like right from the ground up, just making sure that you build from fundamental truths, right? And then there's the last category of ideas, which is the worst, and I think it's the most dangerous. Over a drink, you're like, hey, bro, wouldn't it be cool if we did this, you know? Gosh, hey, bro, wouldn't it be cool is the most dangerous one, right? But irrespective of where the idea came from, I feel you have to have the rigor to go through a process. And you can't just start off and start building and think it's going to work magically, right? Like there's this amazing prof, I think at UV Darden. His name is Alexander Cowan, right? And I've followed his blog and so on. And he talks about this process called the venture design process. And what he does is he combines a little bit of lean and agile and design thinking to kind of make a process that entrepreneurs can just follow to build a venture with a much higher, with much higher odds of success, right? So the first thing you do there is the design thinking part, where you identify your personas and you identify their problems, right? And this is called the customer discovery stage, right? Where you're discovering what, who your customers are and what their problems are, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing this through a lot of interviews and, you know, secondary research and so on. Then comes the fun part, like, which is your MVP, right? And most people think MVP is a product, and it's not. An MVP is just a way to test your value proposition in the quickest way possible without even potentially needing technology, right? So there are multiple ways to build an MVP. Like, for example, if your value proposition is that I will help you design beautiful dashboards in 5 minutes with no learning curve, right? Now, all I need to do is build an amazing landing page, set up a bunch of LinkedIn ads to target people like who are analytics leaders or who are dashboard designers, and see what my conversion rates are. And if they come to my landing page and they sign up and say, hey, I want to be on your first, on your wait list, or I want to be your customer, or even better, they say, here's $50 as my deposit towards my annual charge. You validated your idea, right?
That's true.
So demand validation is one thing, right? Then there are other ways of doing an MVP. It's like you have this Wizard of Oz concept, right? Which is the customer sees one website and they think there's this amazing like technology in the background, but actually you're sending WhatsApp messages to the driver saying, bro, this is the address, please go pick it up from there, right?
Yeah,
Wizard of Oz, right? Then you also have like a concierge MVP, right? It's like saying, okay, I will be your personal assistant, right? Instead of building you the app, you say, I will be your personal assistant. I'm going to come here at 6 p.m., which is how Dunzo started.
Yeah,
Sabir Biswas was actually available on WhatsApp. And people would say, bro, I need 4 cigarettes. And he would like run there, get 4 cigarettes and come back. And like that was the concierge MVP. And I mean, Dunzo is now what? An $800 million company. But it was built using, I'll just put on the light. Sorry, just one
minute. Sure. Yeah.
So Dunzo was built using the concierge MVP, right? So there's multiple different ways. All you want to do using an MVP is to confirm that your understanding of the person and the problem is right, and the solution you're offering is actually valid for the problem you've identified, right? So this is the level at which you have a problem solution fit, right? That's all the MVP is for. Once you validated your problem solution fit, then you start building version one of your product, and then you try to sell it and make money, and you have a go-to-market strategy, and then you try to reach product market fit, right?
Okay.
And then once you've done product market fit, then you start scaling and hyperscaling and whatever other terms there are, right? So this is the process that you typically follow for this kind of stuff. And this process is what I feel this discipline and this rigor of actually doing discovery and validation and MVPs and testing and iteration, that's what product design is, right? The eventual product you build is just the visual representation of your understanding of who the customer is, what is their problem, what are their goals, and how are you helping them accomplish it.
So interesting. Okay. I've been taking some notes as you speak, Vikram. There are certain things that I have to learn a little more about, things that I have to read as well. But you spoke about the thinking behind, okay, here is the product, right? But then you kind of touched upon, after you do that, you have to think of development. So we have to actually go out there and build something. So can you talk about that process? What have you experienced? What are best practices? Just like open it out for us, Vikram, please.
Yeah. So again, I feel like we're too used to thinking about this in a very binary way, right? Like success, failure, product is ready, it's not ready. Like these polar opposite kind of situations are actually not good. You have to think about it as a continuous scale, right? And the only metric that's important is, so think about three buckets, right? Like three buckets of knowledge, right? One of the, what I definitely know and have validated. The second one is what I think I know. And the third one is what I definitely don't know, right? So when you start, like there is a very large set of things in that middle bucket, which is what I think I know, right? And your idea is to take them and experiment so fast and move them into that first bucket, which is what I definitely know, as fast as possible, right? And product development is the process of moving things from one bucket to another, right? And as you start finishing the second bucket, things will start becoming apparent from the third bucket. Hey, you know what? I didn't even think about this thing, but apparently this is a problem for my customers. So let me now like figure out how to solve this problem. So like, let me take an example, right? Like I'm just trying to tell you how I think about product. Okay. So you have to, like the way I think about it is a set of concentric circles, right? My problem was when I started out as an entrepreneur, I thought of one grand, huge circle with everything inside, right? And I thought, gosh, it's going to be the most amazing product in the world, right? But dude, that's just stupid. Okay, like there is, even big companies don't do that. And there's absolutely no way a startup should be doing that, right? So you've got to identify this set of concentric circles. And all your customer discovery would have told you, the customer has four problems, right? Out of those, these two are the most critical, and he's not even going to evaluate your solution if you don't have these two. This third thing is kind of important, but not the most important. And this fourth thing is just like a good to have. You don't really care about it much, right? So now your concentric circles are very clear. Your first two problems are in the core. Your third problem is in the second circle, and your fourth problem could or may not even be there. Like you could focus your energy elsewhere, right? So prioritization is damn important. Version planning is damn important. Roadmap is damn important. Okay. Like you can't just think that you're going to have all the features on in version one. Like you have to think about the core problem and the absolute bare necessary stuff to solve the problem in that first concentric circle, and you build it out, right? So you've done your customer discovery, validation, you've got an MVP that shows that, okay, people are kind of interested in this product, right? Like, for example, I'll give you another example of an MVP, right? Like, if people are like, I want to do stock research, right? And I'm like, okay, fine. Tell me which stock you want to research, and in 30 minutes, I'm going to give you an amazing stock report, and you tell me if you can buy the stock or not at the end of that 30 minutes. Right, after looking at my report. So then I have a straightforward way to validate whether these people value my research or not, right? So I don't need to build a big ass platform with login and single sign-on and like Google and Facebook integration and all this stuff. I don't even need it. Like all I need to know is my research helping them make a decision about whether to invest in a stock or not? That's the core issue. All this other tooling around it is not necessary. Like that, it's commoditized. Anybody can build that, right? But that's not where you should focus your effort in the beginning. So you would think of these concentric circles, which are effectively like your roadmap, right? And you would start building it. And at the same time, you still have those buckets of what do I know for sure? What do I think I know? And what do I definitely not know, right? So as you keep testing it out with customers, you're going to have like initially, let's say you put out something where like you use your own network to get people to sign up and like be in your alpha or your beta release or something. And they're like, dude, I faced the problem so severely that I'm willing to be a guinea pig for you. Okay. But I need a way to solve it. So they'll come on board. They could be well-wishers or they could experience the problem, whatever. Right. And they're going to use your product and you're going to be talking to them regularly and like asking them for their time. Maybe sending them a survey once a week or interviewing them once a month. You know, you need quantitative and qualitative feedback. So, and then you're going to see your product usage metrics and you're going to see like, where are they dropping off? Which pages are they staying most on? So you're going to combine data with qualitative stuff and you're going to understand what's working and what's not working. And you're going to like A/B test certain changes and see what people respond to well, right? And you're going to ship really, really small things, like small things that are like modular units, right? Where you're making progress and learning more things. Like if I were to make, let's say, a data visualization tool right now, right? I would like a feature for me, like a killer feature would be a chart chooser, right? Based on intent. What do you really want to do, right? And I would ask you two questions and I would suggest a chart, and all you need to do is click on it and a template of the chart is there, and you just need to select the data and you're good to go, right? But the old me would have thought, okay, I need to kind of build this chart. Then like, I need to give them 5 options to do this and 2 options to do that, and then change the chart to something else. I'm like, all that is unnecessary, right? So yeah, I guess it all comes down to understanding that it's an iterative process. You're never really done. And let's say you have 52 weeks of runway, right? 1 year. Let's say you saved up 20 lakhs, or you found a way to get friends and family to contribute 50K per month so that like 2 of you at 1 lakh a month can like live for 12 months, that is 12 lakhs, right? So you have 52 weeks of runway, okay? Now you think about the power of compounding, right? I consider learning to be like compounding. The more you learn, the quicker you iterate into the exponential part of the hockey stick part of the curve, mm-hmm. right? So think about it. Would you rather have 10,000 bucks compounding once a year at 10%? Or would you rather have 10,000 bucks compounding 52 times a year at whatever interest rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what learning is, right? So if you say in the first 2 months, I'm going to ship the most bare metal version of the product. So that removes, let's say, 13 weeks from there, right? So now you're left with 39 weeks. And in 39 weeks, I'm going to ship so often that I learn one new thing every week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just think about the number of experiments you can run and how far ahead you would be, rather than spending 8 months on product development and then realizing 2/3 of what you built is not even necessary.
So
the design part feeds into the development part, but the mentality is always the same, right? That like your goals and your problems are then converted into user stories. Those user stories become features. Those features are prioritized depending on the severity of the problems. And then you start shipping out like, so effectively a problem in your first concentric circle would become a bunch of features, right? Like I would need 10 features to, let's say, solve the uploading problem, or I need to save my data securely in the cloud problem, or whatever. I need to make a chart easily, right? So there's a bunch of features you need to solve that one problem, right? That's in your core release. Then your next problem would come in the second concentric circle, and there you'd be like, I need 4 features to make this happen, right? So your features kind of map to your problems. Your problems basically lead to user stories, because that leads to more empathy, and then you break down that user story into features.
Interesting. Okay. So, I mean, I have to think about this so much, Vikram, and probably listen to this a few times for me to even like ingest everything that you said. But it's phenomenal.
But one thing that's really important that you mentioned was this whole idea of failing, falling. See, like, okay, so I'm not trying to like mollycoddle anybody. I mean, if your business fails, it fails. You just move on right after that. But like this whole concept of a product has failed, like you not failed until you quit the business. Okay, and perhaps even that's not a failure. Like you might have, after that, you might probably go and join somewhere at 2x the salary of your learning, right? So I just feel like this whole concept of failure itself is a little superfluous. Like you just need to think of how am I setting myself up for compound interest to happen with the learnings from my product development and design.
Yeah, and that's a brilliant point you brought up, Vikram. So like, you know, 10,000 bucks, do you want it to compound 10% annually or let's say 1% every week? And I think I would do 1% every week. So
yeah, and the best, the weird part is like us humans, right, we are terrible at visualizing compounding. Like,
yeah.
Which is why people don't invest in stocks in their 20s or mutual funds, right? Because they're like, when I'm 60, like, I can't even see what it's going to be, right? But
yeah,
if you actually draw the chart and you see where that wealth at 60 is versus, like, if you had started at 25 versus if you start at 45, you'd be shocked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the whole idea of compounding is, let's say the time it took to double from 2x to 4x is half the time it takes to go from 1x to 2x. Right? Every time you're halving the time. Yeah. So just think about the number of cycles you run through.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here, Vikram, and you kind of touched upon it, but I'm going to specifically ask you this question. So a lot of folks that I talk to, they have ideas. There's a lot of smart people in the world, right? And they have a lot of ideas saying, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this. But their thing is, I have bills to pay, so I cannot let go of my job. And so I don't have the time to work on my own startup or my own idea, right? So if I were to start something, I need a way to be funded enough so at least I can take care of my living expenses. Now, what is your advice to people like that in terms of how have you done it? Maybe through, you know, eating out of your savings or reaching out to investors, right? Or what is your advice to people who are in such a situation where they say, I cannot give up my job, but I have a great idea, right? And I don't have the time. So what's your thinking here, Vikram?
So let's kind of think about, like, what's the goal, right? Like, what is the actual goal? You have a great idea, so what? It, like, the question is, what do you want to do about it? So there's this amazing blog I read, like, over 10, 12 years back when I started out on my own, by this guy called Derek. I think it's pronounced Derek Sivers or Derek Sivers. He had started this company called CD Baby, and he had sold it for a big sum of money. And he was talking about the value of ideas, right? And he is talking about, like, put a value of $1 to your idea, right? That's how your idea is worth. What makes it actually worth a lot of money is execution. It's not your idea, right? So, nobody really cares if you have a great idea or not, right? It's the execution of that idea that changes everything. So the multiplier comes from execution. Sorry, I'm just going to have to again, like, shift a little bit because I think this is an automatic light.
Oh, so like when there's no movement, okay, it goes off. Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was reanimated, but apparently not.
I guess smart lights, but sometimes they're not that smart as well, right? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, man, like. I feel it's important to, before, like, obviously when you start very early, what happens is you have this irrational exuberance, it's called, and like, it's necessary for certain things, but to overcome certain obstacles. But over time, I've kind of realized it's better to know what you're getting into and understand, like, set your expectations accordingly, right? It's not an easy journey for sure. Like, if you, however much you try to plan for obstacles, you will find 5x the number of obstacles in getting things done, right? So firstly, I feel the value of an idea, I mean, it depends on your experience. I mean, you spoke about where ideas come from, right? Like, is it some theoretical thing or is it something you're actually good at or whatever it is? I don't know. But the value of an idea itself is nothing. It's when you act on it, you put in the blood, sweat and tears, you execute it better than 20 others who are trying the same idea at this very moment. You work faster, you learn faster, you become humble and you iterate and you take feedback and you get over your own biases. That's where the multiplier comes, right? So the simple thing is, entrepreneurship, it's very hard to, like, accomplish much by just dipping your toes in. Okay. Like, at some point, you've got to jump into the pool and learn how to start swimming. And the only way to do it is by doing it. Any amount of YouTube videos and Coursera courses are not going to help you, because they don't teach you how to deal with pain, and there's going to be a lot of pain here, right? And there's going to be a lot of, as an entrepreneur, it's almost like you have to fight your own tendencies as a human being. Like, we have this tendency for like crazy amount of optimism, it'll happen somehow, and you know, like this reality distortion field that we set for ourselves. But you have to kind of like overcome those things and understand, hey, it's going to be difficult, but it's not impossible, right? But let me make things easier for myself. So when people say, I can't quit outright, that's actually an amazing place to start. Like, that's great realization you have for yourself. Like, you're not doing something stupid, right? You're living in accordance with your reality, which is the most important thing. So, like, I mean, I have the most respect for people who are cognizant of their responsibilities and they're fulfilling them. Like, dude, that is an awesome thing to have in this world, right? It's not just that coolness of, you know, starting your own company. Like, there is something insanely amazing about like being a good family member and being like supporting your family and like building a foundation for your family, right? So not at all disrespecting that. So then the question becomes, let's reframe it, right? It's not, so you can't quit outright, right? You don't have the funds to quit outright, but you still think the idea has some merit, right? So you could take this one of two ways, right? So one is to actually do some legwork, make some time, get your partner on board and say, hey, you know what? I have this idea. I'm very passionate about it. I would like to test the waters out a little bit. I'm not going to spend any money on it, but I would like to tell you that I need to spend some time on it. So please be understanding for the next 2 months. I'm going to be like going out and meeting a lot of people to understand their problems. So that's the research I need to do before I'm able to take an informed call about, do I seek funding? Do I start offering this as a service over the weekend? Like, you need to start somewhere. Okay. Like, So I have not come across a single story where people have chilled out for 4 hours a day and have built a multi-million-dollar business. Like, I have not come across a single story. Like, everyone has put in the time. Okay. And it's been very unsexy in the beginning, right? So you need to understand that it's hard. Like, put in the time, test the waters. How hard is it to build a landing page, right? How hard is it to make a LinkedIn survey? Make a survey on SurveyMonkey and send it out to 200 of your friends, right? Like, figure out, like, what do people even think about this? Test the value proposition. Like, don't ask them, is this a good idea? Talk to them about their problems, right? If you ask, is it a good idea? They're going to say, yes, it's a good idea. But none of them will pay. So, like, the whole point of customer discovery and validation is to talk about problems. Because people are amazing at talking about problems. They'll keep talking all day long, right?
Yes, yes.
But people are not good at telling you solutions. They are terrible predictors of what is a good solution. They're great at what is my problem. So you, as the entrepreneur, have to take that knowledge and then use your skills to translate that into a solution. So if somebody were to start, like, I would say, if it's a services business, you have a very straightforward way to do it, right? You start offering services over the weekend. So you start like moonlighting, or you see who finds, like, try to partner up with somebody, like, for example, a company that might find a use for your skills and like work with them part time and see how you can develop the skill, right? Or like focus your idea a little bit more. If you feel like, no, this idea can't work like with a small kind of incremental approach, it needs a lot of money, build your story. Build your story, find other people to partner up with who are passionate about the same idea, make an investment pitch and try to raise funds. Like, there are certain, like, for example, I can't build a UPI app with 5 lakhs of funding, right?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I have to build a story and I have to convince them, you know, India has shitty UPI apps. I'm going to build the best thing. And in 10 years, I'm going to have 200 million people. And I need $10 million of funding for that. Like, whatever, right? Like, those kind of ideas require that kind of funding. And if you have such an idea, you have no option but to take that route, because you're never going to get an iota of traction without that funding. Right. So if it's a question of raising funds, go pitch anyways, because like, it's not like you have to quit your job, right?
That's true. Okay.
If it's raise funds, build your story, find co-founders, develop the idea a little bit, make your pitch deck, go ahead. If it's not a question of like raising funds, then depending on whether it's service or product business, there are ways to validate your problem, get feedback, refine the idea, maybe potentially get a teeny bit of traction, and then you could like get evidence to give yourself confidence to take the next step.
Okay, so you're saying this, Vikram, so you're saying build your story, right? Create a good story, and then and I'm oversimplifying here, is find a bunch of investors, right? So find at least one investor. How does that process work, Vikram? So, you know, like, can you double click into the finding of investors? How do those conversations look like, right? What's important to investors? What do they look for? So can you maybe walk us through the mind and the process over there, Vikram, please?
So firstly, there's a few questions we need to ask even before that, right? It's not so much about how much money do you need to make this idea happen. Firstly, do you have an investable business, right? Like, there are some businesses that come under the lifestyle business angle, which is a business that you can run and make a shitload of money as profit. And there are some other businesses where it constitutes a bet. You know, like somebody can take a bet on you that these people are going to have 2 million enterprise customers and they're going to be raking in like $500 million a year, but they're going to need like $10, $20 million to get there, right? So that constitutes a proper bet where you need to like evaluate longer term trends and so on. Investable businesses, so you have to think about firstly, where do investors come from, right? Let's say they raise $100 million, a $100 million fund, right? And let's say they're going to put that into 20 companies, right? And typically that would mean average of five million a company. So maybe that would be at the Series A level, right? Mm-hmm. So now, how much do the typical duration of a fund is about 7 years, right? After which you have to deliver returns to your investors, to your limited partner. So let's say, at a normal rate of, let's say I give 10% returns per annum, right? 10% mm-hmm. returns per annum. So you think about 10% compounded, how much would it be at the end of 7 years? Right?
Yeah.
So let's say 2x.
2x, right? Give or take. 2x, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So then say you need $300 million at the end of 7 years to give back to your LPs so that you return 10% per annum. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how are you going to make $300 million? You're not going to make it by every company averaging some X amount. You're going to make it by three companies or two companies giving you outsized returns while the rest of them probably fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the game of venture capital is a game of swinging for the fences. It's not a game of building profitable businesses, because profitable businesses are not valued like crazy. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are companies like Google and Facebook that are insanely profitable and have scaled like crazy, but they're very rare. By and large, you have to choose one or the other, right?
Interesting.
So these hyperscale kind of companies are what they, where it's a real risky bet and the returns could be huge and the most likely outcome is failure, right? So those are the kind of bets they're interested in. Right. So now if you have an investable business, then you have to think about, do I want that pressure? Like, once you have a VC on board, dude, you're not your own boss anymore, right? As an entrepreneur, anyway, the customer is your boss. Now you have an investor also.
Two bosses, yeah.
Exactly. So if you are all about, I want my freedom, I want my control, like I want to live a certain lifestyle, I want time to myself, then again, it's not the route for you, right? But let's say you have an investable business and you are up for the things that a VC coming on board entails, right? Then you have to think about like who's the right VC, right? Firstly, who invests in the sectors that you're interested in? Who is the person you look up to and who like other founders recommend very highly, right? Who has an amazing network just on account of the things they've done in the past? Like who's opened up amazing doors for other people? So you would obviously focus your pitches on certain investors based on their likelihood and what they bring to the table, right? And in terms of what they are looking for, so the first thing is, I know there are lots of young founders who like, you know, raise money and all that stuff, but typically VCs look for a very solid team with a good track record who has like good experience with the problem, okay, or some unique insight about the problem, right? The next thing they need is a huge TAM, right? Total addressable market. Like they need, like Uber could potentially be used by, let's say, 750 million people in the world. Like that's a big TAM, right? Or Big Basket could serve 200 million people in India. That's a big TAM, right? But how many people are going to buy like a data visualization design tool, right? Like I know for me, that's a lifestyle business, right? So it's very clear, like, so on one side, they look at the team. On the other side, they look at the market. On the third side, they look at execution. Like, how are you executing? Like, have you proven that you're a total like animal when it comes to execution, right? Like, have you got some insane traction within like 3 months, 6 months? Have you shown resourcefulness? Have you shown like resources are not going to get in your way? You're going to find a way to hustle and like get clients and get partners and, you know, get people to come on board at like 50% discount to their salary. Like, have you shown their resourcefulness, right? Another very important thing is clarity of thought and clear understanding of the problem, right? You need to really understand, like, and you should have validated, like, what is this problem that you're solving? And also your big vision for how is the world going to look once you have solved the problem? Like, if you can't do a pre and a post world scenario, you're most likely not going to get invested, right? So these are some of the things that VCs would look for, I feel.
Interesting. Okay, so it looks like this entire conversation was kind of half advice, half your experience and all of that, Vikram. But I still want to ask you this question is, so assuming I'm an entrepreneur who either is budding, I want to be an entrepreneur, or I'm a new entrepreneur. I've just entered the space. What is your advice based on the experience that you've gained over the last decade, maybe decade plus, Vikram?
I'm going to tackle that question, but just before that, let me also just add one other thing about the investor part. Okay. There's a lot of different types of investors. Okay. Like, I was talking about VCs, right? And VCs are like a different animal altogether. But pre-VC stages, there's like angel investors, seed investors, there are grants given by governments, there are like social entrepreneurship accelerators. There are amazing options for you. So just please look at the entire landscape. And there are people like, see, VCs, one single VC can cut a check off. Here we go with the lights again. Dude, this is really stupid.
Yeah.
So one VC can cut a check of $10 million, let's say.
Okay.
But there's also a huge power in getting many small investors together, right? These angel networks are there. Like you have this Indian Angel Network and TAI and these different kinds of syndicates. And you have a lot of like founders of hyper-funded companies who also invest. So there's a lot of capital that's available outside of the VC structure also. So explore that. Like there are lots of mentors who've gone to Silicon Valley, made a few million dollars, come back, happy to write checks of 5 to 10 lakhs for multiple companies and come on board as a mentor also. So just saying, like, don't only think of VCs when you think investment. There are many, many different options. So weigh all of them according to the stage your company is at. Like if you just want to show some traction and validate your idea, you probably don't even need more than 15, 20 lakhs, and an angel or a seed investor is perfect for that.
Interesting.
Okay. Right? And now getting to
the advice to entrepreneurs.
Correct. So advice to entrepreneurs is like have a very strong reason for starting your company, right? Like have a strong why, because the why kind of anchors you when things go bad. Like even when, like if you have a very strong reason why you're doing this, you'll be able to weather the ups and downs much more easily, right? If you're just there to make a quick buck or to become a multimillionaire, you won't last the journey. Because things will happen, like things do go wrong. Like, that's just natural. That's how life is, right? So just make sure you're doing it for the right reason, right? And the corollary to that is set expectations wisely. Like, don't think that it's everyone's going to be like saluting you just because you are an entrepreneur and whatnot. You're going to look really stupid for a really long time, right? Like, your family is going to be like, he had such a nice job, why he quit? Now you see he's earning nothing. Like, you know, they're going to make fun of you, man. You're going to look like an idiot. Okay?
Yeah.
Right. Hmm. So just understand that all the things are going to happen. And another thing is just be humble. Like, the whole name of this game is learning and iteration. So don't get, like, the Indian education system doesn't set you up very well for that kind of mindset. They're all like, you're a failure. You didn't do good enough. But that's not how life is, right? Like, life is totally different. Like,
yeah.
if you can take the punches, learn, and just keep moving on, keep making progress, you'll win eventually, right? And the idea is to survive long enough to be successful. However long enough, right? And make it easy for yourself. Like, there is no one path to success. Like, some people raised $5 million in, like, while starting itself, and they might have made a success. Other people are taking it in nice and slow, 15, 20 year journey. So don't have preconceived notions about how it is. Take your own reality into account and build, like, I was reading Shoe Dog a couple of years back, and it's honestly one of the best books I've read, right? It's about Phil Knight, who co-founded Nike. And he was working at EY for the first few years of starting Nike, right? He was an accountant working with EY, and he was using that to pay the bills. Right now, how many people know that? Like, people think Nike, Phil Knight would have just had this amazing brand idea. He would have come up with that tick mark, and like, he would have started making awesome shoes. Right? Mm-hmm. That's not how it started. So, if you feel like you can't jump head first, and you need to slowly work your way in, do it. Like, do consulting gigs, build your understanding, find more people to network with. So just live your own reality, right? Another thing is invest in learning a lot, because, dude, like, there is a lot you need to learn about yourself. And there's some amazing, like, meta skills, like problem solving. And, you know, there's, like, frameworks out there, like venture design, what you spoke about. You need to know these things. Like, you'll be saving yourself a lot of trouble by just investing in a little bit of learning, right? Like, focused learning.
Hmm.
Another thing is to realize that however much you try, you're not going to become an overnight success. Like, it's a journey. Just like how people go to jobs every day for 30, 40 years, you are just turning up at a different workplace, right? Like, you now, yeah, there is a, if by chance things do work out in your favor, let's say by the time you're in your early 40s, you probably will be in a better position than most people financially. But to get there, you would be in a worse position than them for a long time, right? So just understand that it's a journey, and you need to enjoy the journey. It's not always about the destination. So have fun along the way. And another really important thing is, like, make sure to take your family along. Like, it is a very isolating journey, and a lot of times you will reach, like, dark places mentally, like, not in a depression kind of sense, but you'll be so stressed, and your family can see you stressed, right? But you're not opening up to them because they won't understand, or you don't want to stress them out or whatever. But just don't fall into that trap, right? Like, they are far more understanding than you can give them credit for. So include your wife, include your parents, include your friends in this journey with you, and they will support you along the way. So I guess these are things that, like, and obviously just take care of your health, because if you're not around, your company won't be around.
That's no point. Okay. So I think, Vikram, as always, I think it's been fascinating talking to you. You know, I'm glad I, you know, was talking to you on LinkedIn, and I reached out to you saying, let's talk. I think this is fantastic. I've learned so much, Vikram, from the first video, even from this, where I watched the first one at least, I think, four times. I'm sure I'll be watching this maybe, at least four, if not even more than that, Vikram. So it's always, I think, great talking to you, learning from you and all of that, Vikram. So I'm sure people are going to watch this. Some of our classmates and WhatsApp groups are going to watch this and come back with more questions. So if there is, then it looks like you'll have to spare another. Yeah. So you may have to spend another hour in the next 1 month, Vikram. So
I'm happy to. But thank you so much for this. I really enjoyed it. Like, it gives me also a chance to kind of think a little more deeply about these things. And sometimes we tend to get lost in the weeds a little bit, but this kind of brings you back to your true north. It's like resetting the field.
And then I think you said some fascinating points about your advice to entrepreneurs is, stay focused on the why, have a strong why, right? Yeah. Stay focused on the journey. I think one thing you said great was there will be at some point you will be better off than your cohorts financially, but to get there, you'll be worse off for a very long time, right?
Correct.
So there are lots of trade-offs that you make there. Take people along with you in the journey. I think some very fascinating perspective opening thoughts for me. Vikram, thank you. I think this was great. And so Vikram, I know I promised it would be short, but clearly I just enjoyed talking to you. So it was not short, but I still want to let you go. But I will let you go. Thanks a lot. And, I really appreciate your wisdom. So
pleasure speaking to you.
Cool. Take care. Vikram.
Again.